Howdy neighbors, and welcome to this edition of our Ag Perspectives podcast. Today we're pleased to have along with us the Honorable Congressman from the 3rd District of Northwestern Oklahoma, Frank Lucas from Roger Mills County, talking with us today from his offices in our nation's capital. Congressman, I guess the elephant in the room continues to be the discussion by the Democrats, I guess now on the Judiciary Committee, regarding the impeachment goings on. What exactly, give us kind of an overview of what is going on at this moment in regard to that.
Probably the best way to describe that, Ron, is like the old story about the dog that chased the pickup, and finally he caught the bumper, and he's going down the road at 50 miles an hour trying to figure out what to do. Speaker Pelosi and the Democratic majority in the House, using the extraordinary mechanism of going through the Intelligence Committee, not the committee that historically in the Nixon experience and the Clinton experience, judiciary that handled this issue, have created a report. It was released just not very long ago. It is the basis now to begin in the Judiciary Committee this week the impeachment process. Some would argue that what they have does not reflect the constitutional definition of high crimes and misdemeanors, but they're started down a path they can't get off of. So I would expect sometime before we come home for Christmas, I would expect one or more articles of impeachment to be voted out of the Judiciary Committee. We'll see on a partisan line. We'll see if they bring it to the floor. If so, I assume it would pass by a bare majority on a partisan line, and that would officially impeach the president. But remember, the impeachment and removal are two different processes. So if there's an impeachment article, it goes to the Senate, where they would have a trial, and two-thirds of the Senate plus one would have to agree. I find that almost impossible standard to meet. But again, Speaker Pelosi and her majority in the House have gotten something going that they can't control. I don't think they can conclude, but they can't back away from. So it's a mess, Ron.
Is this something that if they come to a full House vote, is Ms. Pelosi going to basically give permission to some of her more vulnerable Democrats the right to vote no, you think?
I don't see how they can have more than 218 or 19 votes, the absolute bare majority to pass it. She's got to give a waiver to 20 or more of her Democrats who are in districts where literally President Trump won the election, carried the presidential election in the last presidential cycle, and remains popular. Otherwise, she is committing them to an instant defeat, I think. But we'll see how this plays out. But again, they've started something they can't control. They've started something their East Coast and West Coast base demands, and they can't unhook from it. They won't prevail. It's just become the divisive issue of the day. When I walk up and down the streets of the 3rd District, virtually every person has an opinion, and they are the strongest possible opinions. And, of course, as you would guess, in the 3rd District of Oklahoma, an overwhelming majority of the constituents who I see on the streets think this is a waste of time and effort.
From the world of agriculture, one of the things that has kind of popped up here in 2018, but definitely 2019, are these trade aid payments that the president has come up with to help offset especially the continuing war with China, market facilitation payments. Your thoughts on how that has been allocated out, and you think that has been a positive, overall net positive for agriculture?
I don't know that there'll ever be a perfect formula. I know at USDA they've tried to determine which commodity groups have been hit the hardest by the trade wars, and they've tried to reallocate the resources to address the greatest possible pain. I find myself explaining to my colleagues up here, why is this necessary? And then you take them through the trail that for 200-plus years, the United States has been net exporters of agricultural products. In almost every commodity group, we raise more than we can consume. If we can't sell into the world markets, we don't have a price. If you're a grain sorghum person, if you're a soybean person, if you're a hog person, amongst many commodity groups affected, the Chinese market was critically important for us in the last two, three, sometimes almost four decades. The President Trump said that he would stand by production agriculture. He'd stand by the American farmer and rancher if the trade wars extended out, if it took longer to prevail to get a fair and equitable trade arrangements around the world. I give the man credit. Now, twice, he and his department have stepped up to that and kept his word. There's a tendency in national politics for people to pay lip service to rural America, to production agriculture, and then ignore us. I do give President Trump credit for actually putting actions with his words. And anyone who believes that the trade relationships we've had with China for the last 20 or 30 years is fair hasn't looked at the equation. When they sell us two or three times more stuff than they buy from us in any given month over the course of the last two or three decades, literally, we are enriching their country. We have paid for their army. We've paid for their space program. We've paid for the economic development of China. And now the president says enough is enough. But he understands that because we are such huge exporters of ag commodities, and in a number of groups, particularly to China, he understands there's pain, and he's trying to help with that. I respect President Trump for keeping his word in that regard.
Let's talk about trade. You've talked a little bit about the Chinese arrangement or the negotiations that are ongoing. I know you just have almost to pick and choose what you believe or not believe about those negotiations. But one negotiation that's done, we reported this morning that the Japanese Diet has approved the U.S.-Japanese trade arrangement, and I know that's good news for your district and for U.S. agriculture.
Absolutely. And once again, give President Trump credit. The Japanese economy, the Japanese consumer, is one of the more prosperous sets of entities in the world. They can afford what they want to consume, and they can afford high-quality products. So concluding this one is a huge step in the right direction. The thing that would go along with that, Ron, that would add to this would be if the Speaker Pelosi would conclude whatever fig leaf arrangements they need to make tiny adjustments in USMCA so that we could vote in the House on the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, lower those tariffs, get to ag commodities moving north and south again. Like the agreement now completed with the Japanese, concluding our renegotiations with Canada and Mexico are in our best interest. Never forget, 40% of the Oklahoma hog crop before the trade war started went to Mexico. The Mexicans were huge buyers of wheat from Oklahoma. So these are two big steps in ultimately getting around to the real question, Ron, which is China.
Yeah.
And the Chinese are under great pressure. Don't let anyone think differently. When they've come back into the market in recent months and bought pork and bought soybeans, and after 4 years now have started to buy some chicken products from us, and when they say, we're showing you good faith, that's not good faith, Ron. The fact of the matter is the African swine fever may well have killed half the Chinese hog crop. And the Chinese not only are the biggest group of consumers in the world, but they have the biggest hog population. And we're getting into the holiday season where their version of turkey that we think of along with a ham and along with prime rib on Thanksgiving or Christmas, it's that season, and half their hog crop is gone. So they're under pressure to provide enough protein to their population. And it's not just meat products. They've literally bought all the other soybeans around the world they can get. They have to come back to us. And if you're on the lower end of the economic scale in China, you may not get animal protein, but you certainly at least want some plant protein, and that's where the soybeans come in. So the Chinese are under pressure. No matter what they say, give Donald Trump credit. He has said in recent days it might take until after the 2020 election to conclude a deal with the Chinese. I think that's true simply because they know he's the hardest trading negotiator they have ever or may ever deal with. If he would be defeated or removed from office, their view is we'll go back to the deal that's made us rich. Hallelujah. They want him gone, and they're probably going to wait in hopes that he will be gone. But I suspect they're going to be surprised.
Now, let's go back to the – you mentioned Ms. Pelosi and her reluctance to bring that USMCA to a vote. What are you hearing as you walk through the halls of Congress? In other words, you've got some still a few Democratic friends in that building. What is going on inside that caucus on USMCA?
My senior Democrat colleagues tell me that for about a month now, after literally spending almost years discouraging her members from supporting trade renegotiations with our neighbors north and south, that she is frantically trying to move them from a never no to a yes, we need to do this. But when you're turning a battleship or an aircraft carrier around, it takes a lot of effort and it takes some time. And she's frantically, I'm told by my confidential sources within the conference, she's working frantically to do that, because if we come down to Christmas and they barely limp across the line of funding the federal government for a few more weeks or a few more months or maybe the rest of the year, if they pass impeachment, which is turning articles which in the House, which is just as divisive as anything can be, they need something positive to report at home when they go home for Christmas. And USMCA is a positive. So whatever kind of fig leaf she's negotiated, whatever kind of Band-Aid we're putting on it, whatever kind of lipstick we're putting on it, whatever it takes, just get it done, because they're fundamentally not going to change the negotiated deal. It's all face-saving on her part. Get it done. Let's get it voted. Let's get the tariffs down. Let's start moving product again, because American agriculture is so dependent on export markets. If we can't sell our extra, we don't have a price. And right now, we're under tremendous price pressure in all commodity groups. I see that on my farm. I see it on everybody else's farm, too. We have to get these trade deals done so we can start moving product again.
You mentioned one other thing I did want to talk about today, Congressman. That is funding deals, appropriations. It seems like Congress continues to play kick the can on these appropriation deals. What's in these omnibus that we're probably going to end up with for another fiscal year? What's in there that's important in your mind, both in your primary committee, your science committee now, as well as back to the committee that you did chair, agriculture?
Well, from the perspective of science, where I'm the ranking member of the senior Republican, we need to properly fund the NASA to get back to the moon and go on to Mars. Again, I constantly reference the Chinese, but the Chinese have put a lander on the backside of the moon. They've rolled off a rover. They're looking around at the far side, the side you can't see from the Earth. Why does that matter, you say? Well, it's not just the technology to build a rocket to get there. It's not just the technology to build a lander that would safely land on the moon. It's not just the technology to build a rover, a little buggy with a camera and radios and sensors to go around and look at things to see if there's something worthwhile up there. It's the fact that they had to install a network of satellites orbiting the moon so they could communicate from the backside to Earth, and they have established ground-based stations around the entire world, something that only we had done, ground-based stations to communicate. So we need to properly fund NASA. We cannot let a totalitarian society like mainland China lead the exploration of the next frontier. That said, stepping back for a moment to agriculture, just funding the basic programs, whether it's conservation or the administration of those programs at USDA, those kind of things. I don't ask for anything new, bold, or exciting in approach. I just want a regular, orderly process for the coming year so we can have certainty in our business model. What are the things that are causing great angst? Well, the Speaker and her majority in the House don't want any additional money for border security. Whether you want to call it walls or monitoring or people, they don't want any more of it. The President's very insistent that what he has talked about from the first day he stepped into the national profile about securing borders has to happen. And that's not just keeping the bad guys and the druggies and the human traffickers out. That's also maintaining the phytosanitary controls, keeping disease, things like African swine flu fever out of the United States, too. He's very focused on that. So that's one of those hot points. I suspect ultimately they'll come to terms. Whether the President will get new money or he'll maintain the ability to reprogram money, it'll happen. You can't shut the federal government down the Friday before Christmas. That's just too Scroogistic. and even the speaker knows that.
Oh, goodness. Congressman, thank you so much. I guess one other question as far as your thoughts on what the whole mood in Washington is right now. You know, what is it? Is it just a lot different than, say, just even a couple of years ago, you think?
The rancor is louder. The way that certain political forces in both parties in this town go after each other is more intensive. It's more vicious. I would also add, Ron, we've had a huge turnover in members. So you've got a huge number of underclassmen, members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, who are not here when we made things function in some orderly fashion. They've observed the process for the last 10 years where this chaos is the norm. This is not the norm, Ron. Doing the people's business in an orderly fashion, adding to the ability of the economy to work, having a common defense and a concern about border security, those are the way things have been done in the past. I've been around long enough to understand this is not regular order. This is not the way it's supposed to work. And I and a number of my cohorts try frantically every day to get back to that. But it is so difficult when you've got the hard left and the hard right in the electronic media and the hard left and the hard right in Congress trying to manipulate those people for their own political gain. It's so hard to get back to rational. Not impossible. It's just hard.
Yeah. I guess one of your colleagues that won't be back after 2020 will be Mr. Conaway.
Yes. I'm going to miss Mike greatly. Not only was he one of my right-hand guys when we did the 2014 Farm Bill, but chairman and then ranking member when we did the 2018 Farm Bill, building on the 2014 Farm Bill. A solid guy, a CPA by academic training, one of those folks who wanted to make sure every decimal point was in the right spot, every comma was correctly placed, everything balanced on both sides of the ledger. That's a good trait to have in a place like this.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Frank Lucas talking with us from our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. He's, of course, 3rd District Congressman for Oklahoma. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.